Hi, I'm Al Majoros. I am a three-year cancer survivor. My blog, The Cancer Warrior, is one of the top 10 breast cancer blogs, according to blogs.com. I'm here to bring a fresh, upbeat perspective to a topic that to some may seem scary. A positive mental attitude got me through my cancer, and I hope to share that with you. Today we're talking lung cancer with Jennifer Windrum. She's the founder of WTF, Where's the Funding Lung Cancer Campaign. How are you today, Jennifer?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Excellent. Excellent. I'm excited to have you on the show because lung cancer is one of those cancers where people always think that you're a smoker if you have it. And that's something that I just recently found out obviously is not the case. And we want to bring more awareness to this, to lung cancer. So why don't you tell me, well, I love WTF, first of all, but why you started this organization?
Well, you know, back in 2005, my mother told me that she was diagnosed with lung cancer, and my mom's never smoked, and I probably, like the rest of the world, was like, what do you mean you have lung cancer? Are you kidding me? I don't get it. Doesn't make any sense. And I've done a lot of research, and I'm a former reporter, and I'm a PR and social media practitioner now, so when I was realizing that the statistics and the information that we have about lung cancer just made absolutely no sense, I felt a need to do something about it for my mom, but also for everyone else. So I just kind of switched my life focus, still using the skills that I've, you know, been using the last, 10 to 15 years, but on a different focus.
So how did she find out that she had lung cancer?
It was almost like just about everybody else finds out, and they're either usually getting a scan for something unrelated because there's no approved standard screening for lung cancer. And this is the only cancer out there, one of the major cancers, and lung cancer is the number one cancer killer of both men and women.
Really?
And yes, of both men and women. And as we'll get to, obviously, you do not have to smoke to get it. And the numbers of people who are getting lung cancer who have not smoked are increasing tremendously. And, you know, like you mentioned at the beginning, most people associate lung cancer with smoking. And there's no dispute that smoking can cause lung cancer. Smoking also can cause a lot of other diseases. And I think what we're finding now is that, you know, maybe smoking wasn't the cause of maybe some of the other lung cancer diagnoses. And, you know, why is there such an increase in lung cancer among people who have never smoked and even children? I mean, it's I can get into the statistics here.
Of course.
In a little bit if you'd like me to, but it's very, very scary. And I always like to tell people that lung cancer can come to their house just as easily as it came to mine.
Yes.
And it's so true because about 220,000 some people will be diagnosed every year with lung cancer, and about 170,000 of them will die.
Wow.
And that goes back to, you know, screening, no early detection for lung cancer whatsoever. Going back to my mom, in terms of when she was diagnosed, luckily she had a scan for a different thing that she was dealing with, a different health issue, and they caught it somewhat early. But most people don't even know that they have lung cancer until it might be like stage four, because there really aren't a lot of
symptoms or
a lot of major symptoms. I mean, you might have a cough and some other things, you know, but nothing that would just, you know, send you to the doctor right away.
Right. It's not like I had breast cancer, not like you find a lump and you're like, oh my goodness, what is that?
Right. Yeah. I mean, some of them you might think I have a cold, or I have a weird pain in my back or in my, the symptoms just kind of present themselves in different ways. But so that's why the numbers are so high. But what's very scary is it's the number one cancer killer for both men and women, and it's also the least funded. And the reason for that is because of the stigma associated with it.
Right.
And smokers or not, no one deserves lung cancer. No one deserves it at all. And there needs to be an understanding about what lung cancer is, what it isn't. New research is showing that lung cancer in non-smokers or never smokers may be a completely different disease now.
Really?
And so at least there is that much research. But really, the sad thing is that over the last 40 years, the survival rate, the five-year survival rate for lung cancer has remained virtually unchanged at a whopping 15.5%.
Wow, and that's barely over pancreatic cancer, which I believe is only like 6 or 7%.
Yeah, it's very sad. And within 40 years, nothing has changed. And so I decided just out of, with the skills that I have, to create a campaign to try to create awareness. And I changed my life's focus and my life's purpose to try to help educate people about lung cancer and raise money where I can, and align myself in the campaign with other foundations, organizations, and try to get the word out and make a difference. And I can't tell you, I hate to even say rewarding,
well,
it has been,
it
because I always say that and with such a mixed emotions, because I have found my passion, but unfortunately my passion is lung cancer.
Well, I know, and just like you being a cancer advocate, you never want to thank cancer for anything. But
no.
I feel that if I, you know, didn't get this disease, then I wouldn't be as passionate about, you know, advocacy and bringing your information, you know, about your organization to light, as I think if I didn't, then cancer wouldn't even be on my mind. And look where I am now, talking to you about your organization and bringing WTF to the forefront. Because I think, like you were talking about, 40 years ago, or, well, I'm not that old, but when, you know, when I was younger, well, I am kind of, when I was younger, you'd heard lung cancer, you would automatically think of the person who would smoke like, you know, 2 or 3 packs a day. And it was like, oh, well, they were smokers. So obviously they, you know, you don't want to say they
right.
deserved it, but it's not, it wasn't surprising. Whereas now, like your mom and the athlete that we had talked about, who's in Sports Illustrated. What was
right. Jill Costello.
Yes. Jill Costello. Thank you. You know, people like that, you're just like, what? I mean, how can they have lung cancer? They didn't, never smoked, and like your mom, she was probably very healthy her whole life, and cancer diagnosis is just a shock, especially when it's, like you said, lung cancer, and you just expect that to be the smoker's disease.
Right, exactly, and it's so not. And, you
right.
know, not, I mean, the difficulty comes in the awareness. We have to get rid of the stigma
right.
to try to raise awareness about it, so that you can increase funding for it. Otherwise, you know, it's just going to remain the same. And we cannot afford to do that, because it's really become an epidemic. And this is what's really, really interesting mm-hmm. and scary. But if you look at the numbers now, 60% of people who are now diagnosed with lung cancer are either people who have never smoked or are former smokers who quit decades ago.
Wow.
So it's very scary. And that's 60%.
Yeah, that is a lot.
And, I mean, for something that someone may have done, gosh, when they were really young, for, you know, a short amount of time,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, it's just to think that many years later, that something like this would actually happen. But what we don't know, and actually what we're finding more out about now, is, you know, certain genes and maybe why certain people might be more susceptible to getting those kinds of genes, why some people might become addicted to smoking more, why my mom, who has never smoked, might be more susceptible to getting lung cancer, you know, what are the gene mutations that she has? And then, you know, do I have, I mean, but
so do they have that test now? Like I know they have the BRCA, the BRCA1 and 2 tests for breast cancer and ovarian cancer. Do they have that now for lung cancer?
No.
Or are we working on that right now?
they're still working on that, and that's also very it's very sad. And I hate to compare everything to
breast cancer
because I lost my grandmother and many people to breast cancer, and I commend everything that the breast cancer survivors and community have done to mobilize and to bring attention to the disease and get the funding. And
let me stop you right there, because I'm going to agree with you here, because, you know, obviously everyone thinks breasts are sexy, so they're easy to sell. And I'm sure, you know, Matt Zachary of Stupid Cancer, we've had discussions about this a lot. You know, without your lungs, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of breasts you have, without the brain, without any part of your body. So, yes, while I'm with you, I'm glad that the breast cancer community has, you know, formed this big circle and pink ribbon and a hooray and everything. But you're right. I mean, if I couldn't breathe, then I wouldn't be here today talking to you. You know, we need our lungs. We need, you know, they need to start figuring out how to treat the body as a whole instead of pieces.
Absolutely.
You know?
And yeah, all you need to get lung cancer is lungs.
Right.
I mean, it can't be more simple than that. And that's really the message that I'm trying to send home. And, you know, that's a whole nother subject in terms of.
you don't have to sound so frustrated. You're among friends here, Jennifer. It's all good.
Yeah. Well, you know, being in the PR marketing world, I think that some things have gone way overboard.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that some things can backfire.
Yes.
But, and I want lung cancer to obviously get to get that high level exposure. I mean, that's the goal, obviously, because we need it. I mean, it's just so scary and so frightening and actually frustrating, because a lot of people in the lung cancer world feel like they have no voice, and then they go to their doctor, and even the doctors will blame them, or the doctors don't know what to do because there's no standard of care for lung cancer patients. So, I mean, if you look at that, you have no early detection standard. Mm-hmm. You have no standard of care. You have no real personalized medicine research. So really, you have not a lot.
You're kind of a, you know, what's creek without a paddle is what you're saying.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And things are changing.
Right.
But certainly not at the pace that they need to be. You know, that's what we're trying to change. And mobilization is key.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think, too, that, you know, even though breast cancer is a disease that men can get as well, primarily women get it. And women are mobilizers. I think we're just natural mobilizers.
Right.
And there was a time when there was a stigma attached to breast cancer, and luckily there isn't anymore. I would love, and I just so hope for the lung cancer community to be more comfortable in mobilizing. And that has changed some, because, you know, who's going to go out and mobilize if they feel like the people that they're talking to, even their doctors, are saying, well, you brought this on yourself.
Well, you know what I say to that person? Fire your doctor. Because if your doctor says you brought anything on yourself, then you need to say, hold on, I'm not a smoker. I'm a big advocate of, actually, if you're not comfortable with your doctor or anybody in the health profession, you need to fire them.
Yeah.
Because it's, my analogy is this: if you take your car to the garage and every time you take it there, they give it back to you and it's not fixed, do you keep going to the same garage?
No. No.
But yet we let healthcare professionals do the same thing because, well, they're doctors and they know best. Well, they're just people, you know.
Exactly.
I was lucky. You know, all of my doctors have been great. I'm not bagging on the medical profession, but I'm just saying certain people, well, just don't get along. And if you don't feel like your doctor's doing something for you, then find another one. And
exactly.
And it's your life, and there's only one you. So I would go to as many doctors as you can. You know, I know that might be expensive, but what's more important, your money or your life?
Absolutely. And my mom had some very negative experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And I I live in Omaha. She lives in Phoenix. So it was difficult to be at, you know, all of her appointments and whatnot. But you need somebody there who can be an advocate for you. And listening to the doctor, because the patient, when they're in there, half the stuff that is being told to them by by their physician, they're not even able to process, you know. And it can be as simple as, okay, well, we'll do this on Wednesday. Okay, wait a minute. Does that mean you, doctor, are going to call me, or am I supposed to call you? You know, and it just, it turns into an absolute, it can turn into an absolute nightmare. And I think my mom was a nightmare magnet.
Oh, no.
In that respect. And so, absolutely, I'm huge on bringing an advocate, bringing someone with you.
And have them taking notes. And
exactly.
And if you can't find somebody, I say get one of those little voice recorders.
Absolutely.
That's what we did, too. My fiancé would come with me. He would take notes and ask questions. I would bring the voice recorder. That way, you know what, if you forget, because I have chemo brain, and, you know, like you said, when you're in the doctor's office and they're saying, like, treatment, stages, chemo, and you're just being bombarded with all these words that you've never heard before nor ever expected you'd hear, you're just like, what am I doing?
Exactly.
So I mean, and I'm sure anybody can find an advocate, a friend, somebody to come with them in their area.
And that's the thing, if they can't, I mean, I would love to be able to at some point, you know, maybe even provide something like that, because I feel that strongly about it, because it's just, it's critical. And especially when you're dealing with a disease right now, that, you know, different doctors are treating it differently. Like I said, there's no standard of care.
Right.
And that's being worked on, but, you know, it's going to take a long, long time.
So let's get back to your mom now. What was, she'd had some doctors that she didn't really like. Let's explore that a little bit. Tell me more about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, she was going through, I don't even think that, you know, maybe I don't even know, at the beginning, maybe she wasn't even seeing the right kind of doctors. And it wasn't until, later on, several years, that she did get into a comprehensive cancer center. And before that, you know, just, you know, you kind of, you put your faith in the oncologist, and then you don't know if you're supposed to be seeing a pulmonologist too, or what, you don't know what you're supposed to be doing.
Right.
And then it was, she actually had a botched surgery when she had a wedge resection, where the epidural that they used, it migrated. And so at one point, she woke up and she was paralyzed from the waist down.
Oh, now, a wedge, was that taking off part of her lung or what?
Yes, yes. And so, you know, good news is she got her feeling back, but she got a lot of nerve damage. So she has she's been dealing with chronic pain ever since then. But, you know, otherwise she really hasn't felt the symptoms of the lung cancer too much itself. But, you know, it's just knowing who to go to, and knowing whether or not you've done, I guess, the right amount of things and the right things. I think the more information that we can provide people in terms of, okay, have you, where are you at in your process, and have you done this, and have like a checklist basically of basic things, because until we get a standard of care, it's basically, I call it DIY healthcare.
Yeah.
And it really is, unfortunately.
Oh, wow. That's, I can't believe there's not a standard of care. That really shocks me.
Yeah. It's not a good world out there, but I'll tell you what, there are a lot of, in the lung cancer world, I should say, but I'll tell you what, I have met a lot of truly amazing, amazing people through my campaign. And I got to tell you, they are strong, strong people. I mean, as all cancer survivors are, and, it's changed my life tremendously, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
Speaking of campaign, I know everybody watched Stand Up to Cancer, pretty much everyone in the cancer community, because it was on every channel and it, you know, raises money for all cancers. You had a little issue with that. to say the least. And they actually responded to you and let you put a response on their website. Tell me more about that, because that's a great story.
Yeah, you know, and I would say that this is a great example of a community. I call it the WTFers, the WTF community, and other lung cancer advocates really coming together and sharing their voice. Because when you do that, things can change. And so, yeah, we had quite a few issues, I guess you could say, when Stand Up to Cancer, you know, before the telecast started, they were doing a lot of their social media, you know, PR about it. And there was a T-shirt within their website store. And one of them, we felt that it was a T-shirt that's, I'm trying to remember what it even said on there. Oh, it said smoking. And then under that, it had some smaller text, and it actually had like an incorrect statistic on it. And a fellow advocate, Tracy Sestilli of the Beverly Fund, she set up an initiative to get these T-shirts out, to get them out of that store, because all it did was perpetuate the smoking stigma.
Right.
And, you know, in the lung cancer world, we're moving beyond that. We're saying, all right, smoking can cause it, but there's a lot of other things that can cause it now, too. Wake up. There's a lot to be learned here. So a long, very, very long story short, Tracy and a whole bunch of us social media freaks.
I don't know what you mean by that, social media freak, but go ahead.
We, you know, we pounced via Facebook and Twitter and eventually got the T-shirts removed.
Nice.
And my first issue, I guess, was I did a video where I'm really big on accountability and knowing where your money is going.
Oh, yes.
When you're
exactly.
donating and when you're spending time and effort, where is your money actually going? And I didn't feel that Stand Up to Cancer, you know, gave a very good explanation of, you know, where their money was going, particularly for lung cancer. So I did a video and was asking, you know, how their funding model works and how much is directly funneled to lung cancer. So the video kind of started it off, and then the T-shirt issue, and then the actual telecast took place. And there was a little segment, a little funny, quote unquote. And you could say quote unquote humorous, depending on which way you look at it. But it was a bit on there by actors Eric Stonestreet and Jim Parsons. And it just didn't really go over very well with a lot of people within the lung cancer community, especially my mom. And so a lot of people found it to be offensive, but then also, you know, not an opportunity again to talk about the quote unquote new lung cancer that is here, and instead of focusing on, you know, the old. And so I wrote a blog post about my mom's letter that she wrote to Stand Up to Cancer.
Right.
And then we got an apology from Stand Up to Cancer, but it was basically a canned response.
Right.
So a whole bunch of other WTFers and other lung cancer advocates, you know, then again flooded Twitter and Facebook, et cetera, about getting the canned response. And so then we got a couple weeks later did end up getting a personal apology from one of the higher ups there, the senior VP, the Entertainment Industry Foundation. And
Entertainment Industry Foundation is one of the backers of Stand Up to Cancer, for those who don't know, right?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so they said that they were going to be reaching out to lung cancer advocacy groups because November was coming up, which is Lung Cancer Awareness Month, and that they asked me to write if I'd be interested in writing a blog post on lung cancer and my experience with it, with my mom, et cetera. And I said, of course I will. And That is actually...
You're like, no more exposure, please. I'm good. Thank you.
Yeah. So, you know, it just... So that post is there, and I'm... Mm-hmm. It was therapeutic. It was also... I'm just very, very happy for, you know, the momentum that a community really can have and the difference that it can make, because a lot of people are like, oh, no, you know, this is just the way it is, and they're bigger than we are, and so it's not worth it. And I say it's absolutely worth it, and you absolutely need to share your voice, and because you can make a difference. And so I wrote a blog post about that as well, and it's just, you've got to. That's just the way that it is. And so I was absolutely thrilled, and it's a nice, I hope, I mean, it was a great opportunity and a nice large platform to hopefully raise more awareness about the fact that, and the title of my blog post was just like, my mom, your mom can get lung cancer too. Mm-hmm. And that's my hope, is that people are just become more aware before it does actually come to their home, and to care before it actually does come to their home. Because the statistics are definitely not in our favor, and neither is the research right now, unfortunately.
And I think your story with Stand Up to Cancer is a good one, because you have to think, yes, they're a huge organization, and, you know, all we see is like Stand Up to Cancer and their big logos and everything, but they're people just like us. And like you said, your entire WTFers and I'm sure the rest of the cancer community was behind you, and you know, look how that changed. You know, I'm sure a lot of people would love to write a blog post for Stand Up to Cancer. You were actually able to do it because you had a compelling story, because they saw in you, you know, probably the story of any lung cancer caregiver.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the person who did write the personal apology, he's a cancer survivor himself. Mm-hmm. And so... You know, and it's really hard not to get all caught up in, I'm trying to think of the best way to say it here, but I mean, I can understand, you know, from their standpoint.
Right.
It's a huge organization. Yeah, mm-hmm. You're going to be, I'm sure that they already had their talking points, and they already had their standard letters written for anybody who didn't like a certain segment. I mean, that's what you do in the PR
exactly,
world.
Yes.
But that just wasn't going to cut it. And, and you know, I do give them credit for not ignoring us. And
right.
I told them that we weren't going to go away. So maybe maybe they figured that better deal with it now. But I do give them credit for doing so and for providing an opportunity to help make a difference.
Exactly. Just like you are. I mean, now a lot more people know about your organization because of that. Because imagine if you just said, well, they're a big organization, I guess it's okay. You know, more people know about WTF now that go on the Stand Up to Cancer website and, you know, who listen to this podcast and whatever. I'm not comparing myself to Stand Up to Cancer, obviously, but, you know, the more... yeah, okay. You know, the more awareness that you can get, be quiet, you're making me laugh. The more awareness that you can get is the most important thing. You know, like they say, there's no such thing as bad publicity, but you know, you turned their kind of bad publicity into good publicity for you.
Right. Absolutely. And I guess maybe that's where my skill as a PR person and journalist comes in. But yeah, it's a fine line, and you don't want to ruin relationships along the way.
Right.
But yeah, it's definitely, it's a different world out there. And with social media, and my campaign is primarily a social media campaign, and that's because that's what I'm really passionate about. And I just think that there are so many ways to create change through it. And so that's another reason that I created it. I mean, you get social media there, and then you have a politically incorrect campaign to work with to try to create change. And I just, the timing couldn't have been better, I think, just from, you know, my personal standpoint, my professional standpoint, unfortunately for my mother's standpoint. But the ironic thing is that, and it sounds cliche, but when I was little, I knew that there was something big that I was supposed to tackle. And mm-hmm. throughout my life, I was trying to figure out what it was. And as I, you know, went through different life changes, I thought, well, maybe it's this. Well, maybe it's that. But it, the minute that my mom told me it, that she had lung cancer, I knew that that's what it was. Mm-hmm. So I know that this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And I have no doubt about that whatsoever in my mind.
I can relate to that. Now, your organization, is it a 501c3 organization?
No, it's not. I'm just a flat out campaign.
Okay.
And so I was partnering with a certain foundation mm-hmm. For a while, about almost a year, and it was a great partnership. And I'm back open to forming new alliances, okay. Along with that foundation, the Bonnie Diodario Lung Cancer Foundation,
okay.
because the good thing is that I can kind of say things because I'm not a foundation. I can kind of get away with
mm-hmm.
doing some things and investigative pieces and
right.
some other things that maybe others don't want to do. And so I can kind of be that bad cop when needed. And so right now I'm looking at and working with some other foundations and organizations in terms of working on some campaigns for them. And
awesome.
So it's a great partnership. And I'm always looking for more because I don't think that there could be too many. And it's a great way. To get the word out and just, again, bring more people together and make more people aware.
So how would people get a hold of you if they want, well, I shouldn't say if, but when they want to know more about lung cancer and donate to an organization?
Well, if they're on Facebook, they can just type in, where's the funding
okay.
for lung cancer, and they'll find me there.
Mm-hmm.
I am not shy about giving out my email address or my phone number, whatever. So my email address is JenniferJWindrum@gmail.com, and that's
okay.
JenniferJWindrum@gmail.com.
And you're on Twitter?
Yep, I'm on Twitter, and that's @JenniferWindrum is my handle there. So, yeah, I mean, Facebook, Twitter, email, whatever. You can find me. I'm there, and we will continue to mobilize.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I love it. Thank you for joining me today because, you know, like we had talked before the show, I really wasn't aware that, well, I didn't know about the low survival rate, but that lung cancer was not primarily a smoker's disease.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And if you come to the WTF Facebook page and look at the photos, I mean, it's incredible
mm-hmm.
to see. It's no longer your grandma or your grandpa,
right,
who was a smoker anymore. No more.
Well, we're going to get the awareness out there for you, Jennifer.
And
for your mom, for sure.
Absolutely. I so appreciate it. I really do.
Oh, you're welcome.
Very much.
This is The Cancer Warrior. You can always find me on Facebook because I am a Facebook junkie, Mel Majoros. So you can also become a fan of the show on Facebook, The Cancer Warrior on EmpowerRadio.com. Check out my new website, thecancerwarrior.net. And as always, life looks pretty good from where I'm sitting. Sending you good vibes. It's The Cancer Warrior on EmpowerRadio.com.